This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's game time, episode 29. I think it's 28. We didn't had one last month because February, the time that we were supposed to air the show for February, it was a public holiday.
It was.
Anyways, that was Richard Bradbury, and my name is Jeff Sandhu, and thank you for listening to Game Time. And if you're listening on the podcast, hello, Butch.
Hello, Butch, yes.
Butch is one of our friends who listen in only via podcast because he's not based here in Malaysia. Anyways, for the first part of the show, I actually did an interview with Arata Naito. He is the head of product management Southeast Asia region at the Sony Interactive Entertainment in Singapore. So I talked to him about the journey of the PlayStation console. I spoke to him, I remember my first ever PlayStation console. It was a console that my friend was very kindly enough to lend me for about a month. And I just fell in love with the console. Then I was really young. I can't remember how old I was below 10. Definitely
right.
Below 10.
You started earlier than I did.
I started early, but it wasn't my unit for, only when my first unit was I was 13 years old. That's right. When I finally managed to,
get your hands on was it a PS1?
It was a PS1, yeah.
Wow, and I love those things.
Yeah, love those things. So I talked to him about the journey. In more interestingly, I asked him, when did that shift happen from a gaming-only console to what it is now? It's like, they're doing everything with the PS4 Pro and the PS4 Slim, and even with our general PS4 itself, you could do Netflix, you could stream
Spotify.
The web, Spotify, could do so many more things, and that seems to be like the direction that Sony wants to go into a console that could do more than just gaming. So my first question to him was, when did this whole journey sort of begin?
Well, first of all, we are very happy with where we are right now. We have sold over 53 million units of PS4 worldwide. So, that puts us in a very good position to bring game, not just gamers, but also, people who enjoy entertainment contents in general.
And how big is the presence here in this part of the region? Is Asia really your main market in the sense, because a lot of us are gamers, a lot of us seem to have Sony PS4s. How big is the market here?
So while we cannot disclose any sales numbers, one thing we can say is that we are very excited about the how PlayStation business is growing in Southeast Asia, especially in Malaysia. We see Malaysia as one of the focus countries, and we work closely with Sony Malaysia to expand the network of authorized shops. We call PlayStation authorized dealers. So people can now officially buy our official products from our certified shops.
So one part is obviously the consuming or the purchasing of the devices that obviously you now work closely with. The other part is obviously the gaming developers. We see a lot more of gaming companies here in this part of the region, in Malaysia, Singapore. How closely do you work with these independent game developers or these local game developers to push out titles for a console?
So what we are finding out is that in Southeast Asia, there are talented creators and studios who have been helping out to develop, AAA games, right? So what's happening right now is that these developers and studios are now interested in creating their own contents, and we'd love to support those studios to come up with contents for PlayStation.
And you're trying to drive them to do more VR stuff because Sony is obviously now we are able to purchase the Sony PlayStation VR, used to be called Project Morpheus. It was a big thing. A lot of people very excited about. Now it's finally available to consumers. How much of VR focus is Sony doing now? Or is it still, it's still early? It's not for the masses. It's only for a certain few. Or do you look at this like this is really for the mass consumption?
I think there is a tremendous opportunity for studios to work on VR contents because right now we are in a sort of first generation of VR hardware and contents. So any developers with good ideas, they can try out, if their ideas would work out with the VR hardware. And, if we can publish their contents globally on PlayStation, I think there's a good chance for even indie developers to, create the sales worldwide.
How hard is it for game developers in developing a VR game? Because a lot of games these days are that it's VR. It seems to be a VR experience instead of a proper full-fledged game. Is this due to, you know, gaming developers finding you know, the right balance of creating a game for VR, or because, like you say, it's, you know, it's version one at the moment, so they're still trying to find their feet at the moment?
Yeah, I think a lot of developers are now starting to find, you know, how they can maximize the VR experience. You know, in traditional gaming, developers control the camera motion of the characters and so on. But, you know, with VR, what's liberating is that the players have a liberty of moving their cameras, you know, as their own. So it... In one way, it gives the liberty of creating contents, you know, free from the constraints of the traditional gaming. But on the other hand, you know, it's a challenging for developers to find out the right balance between the like you said, the experience of the VR and the gaming.
But VR is definitely the future then. You really do believe that VR will be the, you know, the norm of gaming. Everyone in the future, you know, maybe 2-3 years down the road, when they think of gaming, is immediately putting a headset on and that's gaming. Is that the vision?
Well, not necessarily the headset part, but we believe at Sony that virtual reality is actually the game-changing technology for us. So we have invested in this technology for a long time, actually. And, you know, we don't see this as a trend that's going to pass. And, you know, we are in full support of developers who wants to develop VR contents. And, you know, we hope to come up with a better VR equipments as well.
And in 2016, you launched the PS4 Pro, and then you have also the Pro, you know, the VR headset. 2017, what can we expect? Will there be, you know, new announcements of hardwares, or is it just solely focusing on, because the hardwares were just recently released, so you're now focusing on the experience side of things?
Well, 2016 was a very exciting year for us because it was the first year we released three new hardware. So, you know, new PlayStation 4, which is slimmer and lighter, PS4 Pro, and PSVR. And, you know, it has been a pretty exciting year, and in 2017, we hope these hardware will, you know, will be brought to, you know, many more customers.
And personally, any games that you are looking forward to personally for 2017?
Well, the first title that's coming up from our own worldwide studio is Horizon Zero Dawn, which we have a hands-on demo today. And that game is very, very exciting for us. You know, we have seen the Guerrilla Games from Amsterdam working on this project for quite a while. And you know, I think the Horizon Zero Dawn has everything that gamers want in, you know, role-playing game. You know, there's a role-playing aspect, and also there's exploration and open world. And there's a strong storyline. So, yeah, we are very, very excited about the Horizon Zero Dawn.
Also, maybe then on Sony side, is it more AAA games you're looking for in 2017 or more independent local games you're trying to push out in 2017?
So what's great about, you know, having 53 million consoles, you know, all over the world is that, that now the publishers and studios now can create their contents exclusively for PlayStation 4. So if you look at you know, upcoming games like Nioh from Koei Tecmo and Horizon Zero Dawn from our own studios, these are, you know, PlayStation 4 exclusive titles, and you can see the quality of games when developers and studios develop games for PlayStation. You know, you know, the sky is the limit, and they can maximize the power of a PlayStation 4.
That was Arata Naito. He's the head of product management Southeast Asia region at the Sony Interactive Entertainment in Singapore. And when we come back in just a moment, I will be doing a review of For Honor. It's a new game. It's a medieval combat game that Richard has not gotten into it yet.
No.
And there's a very good reason, I think, why he doesn't want to get into this game. We will find out in just a moment. You're listening to Game Time, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
And we're back. This is Game Time, episode 29. Earlier on, we had a chat with Arata Naito. He's from Sony Interactive Entertainment Singapore. Now, reviews. There are so many new games that have been out over the past few weeks. Mm-hmm. So many more updates as well to games that we are playing. I know Overwatch has an update.
Yep.
Battlefield also has an update.
Does it? I didn't know that.
Anyways, one of the biggest games in terms of new types of games. There's so many. Obviously, a lot of people are thinking about that one, you know, of this new universe and so forth. We will come to that in just a moment, and we'll give you an explanation of why we're putting it at the lowest priority. And we're talking about Horizon Zero Dawn, and we'll tell you why that is like on the lowest of our priority at just at this point of time. But for now, I just want to talk about For Honor. It is a medieval, you know, hack and slash fighting combat game. But unlike your Street Fighter and so forth and all, this is a third person point of view. And I don't know. I'm mixed about this game. So let me go through about the whole setting of the game. So you play either one of three factions. You have the Vikings, you have Knights, and you have Samurais. And each of these factions have three heroes in them. And, you know, they've got like, it's sort of like, you know, one hero, which is very quick, but, you know, not very, doesn't have a heavy armor. And then you've got one hero, it's kind of like the balance of, you know, being mobile and nimble and quick, but has heavy damage. And then you have one, which is like a tank kind of guy. And this is massive damage, but super slow. And he moves really slow. But it's brutal. Where it differs from each of these characters, and even if me and you, for example, Rich, we pick the same characters, the same samurai character that we like, even there are slight differences that you can add on to make that character your own.
And so you can change their default moves.
You can change, you can change a lot of the appearance first. So you can change how your armor wants to look like and some of the fancy things you can put into your armor.
I'm all about the way I look, man.
Yeah, you know. You can even change the weapons that you carry as well. And if you change the weapons that you carry, obviously you have different moves and different skill sets that you can slowly change as well. Single player, storyline, pun intended, it's like a double-edged sword because it's the story is just weak. There's no point in terms of, you know, trying to remember the characters.
Who was the developer?
Yes.
just asking that question.
Ubisoft.
All right, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Ubisoft is the developer of this game. Mm. So the combat system, it's very tricky. It's a game that is very easy for you to get on and play with, but it's super hard if you want to master the game. So that's, for me, it's where I'm kind of like in a limbo. I'm not quite sure. Am I going to invest enough time in this game to master the game? Because the controls are tricky. I know it's complex, but it's tricky in the sense where I'm used to holding. Now, we're playing on the PS4, by the way. So on the console, the controls are mainly down to your R2 button, your L2 button, and your R1 button. So you're using your left middle finger, your right hand middle finger, and the index finger as well. That is the only three controls you kind of need. X is more for you to sort of, you know, jump around or slide away from a tackle or an attack. But generally, those are the three buttons that you need to press. And the L2 button, which uses your left hand, that's where you focus onto or you zoom in to a character
and you
lock into that guy.
Right.
But the lock-in it's not permanent. It's you have to hold it down for the entire time.
While you're
moving as well. So imagine if you're, you know, your left hand, you have your middle finger on the L2 button, and then you've got your left thumb on the joystick, and then you've got your right thumb on the joystick, and you've got your R1 and R2 on...
My hands just ache thinking about it.
It's just too many moves. Right, so it requires a lot of work and a lot of, you know, recalibration in my brain to know how to master this game. And each character has their own unique ways of attacking. So it's not just like, you know, button mashing in a sense. But it made me feel like, yeah, you know, I get that in the menu, there's the training system and it shows you how to...
Kind of like
Street Fighter used to be. It kind of shows you of like, you know, if you do R1, R1, R2, that's, you know, this power. And if you do R1, R2, R2 is this power. So you have different variations of it. And there are plenty of ways to attack a player. But the thing is, I end up just button mashing right. all of them, right?
As I did in Street Fighter.
Which is generally what people would normally do in a hack and slash combat game. But the game, you can't just do that and expect to win, which is good but also bad because it feels like the timing is so important that my internet connection doesn't play well with me at all. It's on its own world. So I miss a lot of the points or the cues when I'm supposed to
Is this when you're
trigger.
Playing against other people?
This is when I'm obviously playing multiplayer, which has a complete potato of a server because it doesn't have a proper... yes, I say the potato server.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. The reason why is because it just has its own mind. The matchmaking system doesn't quite work properly. You get kicked out or you respawn in between a game when a player suddenly leaves because it has to recalibrate or something like that, and it has to find a player that is searching for a game to join in the game before you can then spawn again. But this is in between a battle, and you're like, hang on, man, what's going on here? And then the other thing is that if it can't find a player, generally it doesn't, what it does is it replaces with a bot. And these bots are, I don't know, I just don't feel it's an equal fight to us players, especially to me.
You don't get that feeling of having beaten something when you know it's too easy.
It's a numbers game. The more players you have on the field compared to your enemy, chances are you are definitely going to win. Even though you are rank 1 against a person who's rank 30 in the sense, if that guy is just alone, 2 level 1 players will have a chance of beating that guy.
Right, I'm with you. You know, on PS4, it's not cheap. It's 229 ringgit.
It's a premium game.
You know, if you wanted to buy it on Steam, I'd assume it'd be a very similar kind of price. It's a very niche game for people who like that kind of game. And if you are somebody who likes a kind of combat game, like you say, Tekken, Street Fighter, I think it's a game that possibly you'd be very interested in.
Now, Rich, I have to kick you out of the studio because Uma Pagan is with me in the studio. We've
Hello.
Kicked Richard Bradbury out of the studio. We'll bring him back in just a moment. But Uma, you're in the studio because you have a very cool console that just arrived in the Malaysian shores, which is
the Nintendo Switch.
Woohoo! So, it's out. A lot of buzz about the whole Switch, about whole Nintendo as well, because this is the first time that we're seeing a console that has that seamless interaction of your TV and also the mobility of it. In
yeah,
sense,
so
right?
Here's the thing. We call it a console. I'm just going to call it handheld. That's what it is. When you take it out of the box, it's very simple. There's a simple dock. It's got a HDMI port, an Ethernet jack, and a USB, and it plugs into your wall and your television, right?
Nice.
Then you've got your device itself, where you have 2 what they call Joy-Cons, which are your controllers, which you attach to the side of the device. They're removable, so you can play 2-player games with your buddy. Or you can attach it to a frame that makes it feel like a standard controller. That's essentially it. A screen, 2 Joy-Cons, and a dock.
It looks very, very, very nice, by the way. I have to say, the build quality of it, especially
great.
When you remove the Joy-Con controllers, that click sound that it does, the build quality of it, the stand that it has, it feels very nice, though.
The stand's a bit flimsy.
Okay. It still works in a sense. But how is it in terms of, a lot of people were questioning of the device being able to sync when you, you know, take it off from the dock and then able to continue off where you left off kind of thing. Does it actually work as how it was, you know, marketed in a sense?
Perfectly.
Wow.
So I slide it into the dock and the image instantaneously appears on my TV screen and I can just continue playing. As soon as I pull it out, I'm good to go. Exactly. It's just there. And I think... And let me tell you what it is. For me, that's the wonder of USB-C. I think USB-C is probably one of the greatest inventions that we don't talk enough about because it's power, data, audio, video, everything through one port at lightning fast speeds. And I think it's that speed of transfer, because the machine's USB-C, by the way, so it's that speed of transfer that you see. It uses high-speed HDMI, just... Oh, seamless. Exactly, and like advertised.
And the games are, you can buy the games on the online store.
Nintendo eShop.
Or the cartridge itself.
Yes.
Which apparently tastes weird.
So apparently, they put this coating on the cartridge to prevent children from eating it lah, or swallowing it, right? And of course, the internet being the internet, some people decided, man, let's lick the cartridge and see what it tastes like. I haven't done that myself, Jeff, so I'm not going to give you a comprehensive review on that front.
All right.
But I hear it's awful.
Okay,
yes,
all right.
I hear it's awful.
So the game that comes with it, there are a few preloaded games in a sense, and these are all generally, it feels like it's a party game.
So. Yeah, so this is the one thing that Nintendo, I think, does better than anyone else, Microsoft, Sony, whatever, right? Party games, which you can play with your friends. It's
all
called
boring games.
1-2 Switch. Yeah, it's called 1-2 Switch. Switch, right? And the idea behind these games are quite unique because, yet again, there's another thing that Nintendo perfected really well early on with the Wii is the motion controllers. I think I find them even better than whatever the PlayStation Move is or anything, right? That technology is very good. Yeah. And so this one is a very interesting concept. You don't look at the screen. You leave the screen to the side of you and you follow the instructions. You just use your ears, but you face your friend. You're face-to-face with your friend as you're playing a ninja game, or we played ping-pong in the office.
I had fun, I had really good fun.
And there were only 8 to start, but once you unlock the games, I think there are over 28 games on 1-2 Switch.
Right.
So there are a ton of games there which comes free, and if you buy it in Malaysia, all the packages come with Zelda as well.
Ooh, nice. And obviously you've been playing a bit of Zelda.
A lot of Zelda.
A lot of Zelda. How is it, though?
So the 3-hour battery life is not enough.
So it only has 3 hours on its own.
It's not plugged in, which is all right. And Zelda's amazing. It's immersive. I mean, some people are comparing it to Skyrim, saying it's the absolutely...
Wow.
There's some people saying it's the same game, right? Because it uses
it's open world,
a similar engine and all that stuff. But I think it's got something over Skyrim, and that's the nostalgia value. So for anyone who grew up, either watching the Zelda cartoons or playing the original Zelda on Nintendo, I think that nostalgia value takes you a long way. And Nintendo, over any other company, knows how to milk that. But no, the graphics are amazing. The motion, you know, the character animations are fantastic. The world is so expansive. You can literally climb anything. Just anything. You want to climb that? Yeah, sure, just climb and see. Soon, sometimes there are these disembodied voices telling me that I need to go to this direction on the map, and I'm just like, no, disembodied female voice. I want to do what I want. Yeah.
Is the console worth the money, or this handheld gaming machine worth the money?
My only complaint, and this is going to be a complaint for anyone in Malaysia, the pricing is stupid.
It's
like,
expensive.
Just stupid.
It's more expensive than the PS4 Pro.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, no, you see, in America, I would say buy this without thinking. It's $299.
Wow.
Right? It's 300 ringgit, 300 US, which you convert it even at our crappy exchange rate right now, will come up to about 1,400. It's actually between 2.2 and 2.4 here. It's a 800 to 1,000 ringgit difference in Malaysia compared to the US retail price. I don't know why that is. I know there's no official Nintendo in Malaysia or Singapore, and so therefore there is a official distributor, though. I don't know why the pricing is like that. It's stupid, Jeff.
So for its price in Malaysia, I don't think it's quite worth the money. But
if you've got friends in the US...
If you have friends in the US or if you're traveling anytime soon to the US, $299 USD, it's a no-brainer because it is a fun console. It puts a smile on your face, and that's what a gaming console is supposed to do, and it does its job.
Meanwhile, for 2,400 ringgit, you can spend 1,004 getting a PS4, and you top up a little bit, you can get the whole VR kit as well.
And you can buy a TV as well. So with it as well. For 2005, you get a PS4, VR, and a TV.
So can I just say, for those of you who aren't the kind of people who are too caught up with the whole VR experience, or even massive multiplayer shoot 'em ups and stuff like that, if those are not your kind of games, the Nintendo Switch is for you, because this is really focusing on the single gamer. I'm sure there are going to be lots of double player games coming out, and maybe even internet games. But for the moment, with Mario, with Zelda, it's really focused to the individual player again.
All right, cool. I guess if you are traveling outside of Malaysia and if you do come across the Nintendo Switch, it's a no-brainer. But if you're in Malaysia, just wait for a while.
Singapore also as expensive.
Just wait for a while. Anyways, Uma, thanks very much. I'm going to bring in Richard back, and we're going to talk about Ghost Recon in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
Bloggers for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Richard Bradbury.
Hello.
Now, Richard, Our favorite game, mm-hmm. Battlefield
Current 1. Favorite game, Jeff, yes.
Current favorite game, Battlefield 1.
Yeah. There is a DLC dropping on, I believe, the 14th.
They shall not pass.
They shall not pass. Mm. The hardened veterans of the French army make a stand in a brutal defense of their homeland. So we are expecting, I believe, it's 4 new maps.
Yep.
Verdun Heights, which is the opening barrage of the Battle of Verdun. Fort de Vaux.
Uh-huh.
So an inside map mainly. Lots of kind of corridors with some outdoor wide spaces for the sniper types. Soissons, which is a village, a French village with some high vantage points and
this
some
is
close
the poppy gardens.
It
as
is.
Well,
right? Sorry, no, that's Rupture.
Ah, right.
That's the next one. Rupture is the one that is essentially trench fighting amongst the poppy fields. Mm. So there's 4 new maps. There's 2 new operation modes. There's a new game mode that they are calling Frontline, which is a combination of the conquest mode, which is essentially capture the flag, and operations, which is to defend 2 or 3 points on the map. So it's a combination of the two. There'll also be a new behemoth. A behemoth being one of the elements in the game that can turn the tide of battle if you are losing. Oftentimes they don't, though, let's be honest. There's a new tank will be introduced, some new elite classes, stationary weapons, a whole bunch of new weapons and melee weapons, and of course a normal primary weapons. New ranks, new unlocks. I mean,
as you can tell, it's a huge update.
It's an enormous update.
It's the first of 4 DLCs, which they then announced
they
what
did.
The 4 is going to be as well. Yeah. For premium pass holders, 14th of March is when you are able to get early access to it. Before it's then, 2 weeks from then, it will be launched as a separate content that you can buy individually if you didn't buy the season pass.
Yeah.
Anyways, and then we will probably do a full review of what happens. At the moment, I was a bit excited before seeing the CTE testing. Now when I watch the CTE testing, I'm going like,
But at least you'll get some new weapons.
At least you get new weapons, new maps and all. And the poppy fields do look really nice too.
They do.
Richard, so we have to mention Horizon Zero Dawn because we've been teasing people about this. And obviously it's a big, big game that has been announced this year. I caught glimpses of the game firsthand when I was talking to Arata Naito from Sony Interactive Entertainment Singapore. They had a demo there. I didn't play the game, but I was watching someone playing the game for about 10 minutes or so. I got a bit interested into like, wow, it looks really nice. Beautiful game. Very different as well because you're now playing a female character, which is kind of like the Witcher 3 feel, but it's, you know, in an environment where the animals are sort of robots in a sense, and it's very unique.
Right.
I've never seen this before. In my entire gaming experience, I've never seen a universe like this before.
Right. There are elements of Skyrim that I can see in elements of Fallout I can see in there. And
even a bit of like No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
This is a completely new world.
Right. Even that, you know, on a kind of visual level, it appeals to me. Yeah. And the kind of overarching idea appeals to me. But like you say, it's a game you've got to invest such a lot of time in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm willing to do that having a job and a life.
We'll find out like a full review. I think we will try and get
One of us has to do it.
Yeah. Jen Han will probably come back. He's somewhere in one of these Kazakhstan,
Uzbekistan.
One of the stans.
Yeah. Basically. He's over in the stans.
So perhaps when he's back, we'll try to get him on and talk about Horizon Zero Dawn and is it worth the money? Because he needs to convince me basically of why I should buy Horizon Zero Dawn. Which then leads me to a point. I need to convince you, Rich, to buy Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Okay, right.
Now, the reason why is because, Rich,
you need people to play with.
I need people to play this game with.
I know. It's actually released now, then, is it? The full game is
out. So the full game has been released. It's been released about a day and a half now.
You were trying to convince me quite heavily.
The reason why is, Rich, is because we had a massive fallout with The Division.
We did.
But we loved the game
before
it came out, the stuff that we were pushing out. By the way, this is the same developers, Ubisoft, again.
Yeah.
And this is a different take of the Tom Clancy genre. So instead of you set in a future world like The Division, or, you know, set in like some futuristic army, or you got your espionage kind of stuff like a Splinter Cell and all this kind of stuff, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon sets in a world where it feels a lot more what's happening today, right now.
It's in Bolivia.
It's in Bolivia, and you are fighting the Narcos.
Right.
And that's just, for me, it's great because I just finished the Narcos, which is on Netflix as well. So I thought, oh my God, this is great. Like, I'm finally fighting drug lords in a sense, right? So you fight against, you take down, the main objective of the game is to take down the cartel leader. His name is El Sueno, and he's this bad guy, full of tattoos, very much in fashion, which is kind of like, okay, all right, this is a guy who's probably, you know, keeping himself up to date with the fashion trend, and obviously tattoos are cool, and hence, you know, you look like a drug lord immediately, right?
So, okay.
The premise of the game is simple. You just have to take down...
Oh, El Sueno means the dream, by the way.
Okay. Right, so you have to take down the dream,
right?
And you start off the game in... The map is huge, amazing map.
I've been watching footage of how big it is.
Beautiful. Yeah. So you can actually, when you start the game, to just gather up your troops and go after El Sueno, wherever he is. And if you can find him, if you know where he is, you can just go there and take him out if you want.
Right.
Game over.
Okay.
But it's not that simple, because the game, even though it has like that openness of feel, you can do whatever missions you want to do, you can start however you want to start, you actually got to sort of learn the way and try to rank up and get better weapons along the way. It feels a lot like it's a mix of The Division plus Ghost Recon's Rainbow Six plus The Witcher 3 in terms of the map.
Go on, say Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto, definitely Grand Theft Auto. And it has a bit of a Call of Duty feel, because in terms of the sound, I've noticed that the sound when you get hit by an enemy team, the bullet when it hits you sounds exactly the same. Like if you were playing Call of Duty and someone was hitting you. Oh. It feels like Ubisoft has just copy and pasted.
Ubisoft. What right, okay, right.
So that's just one of the grips that I have, one of the issues that I have with the game. It kind of feels a bit bored.
Let me just interject just for 1 second, right? So the first stumbling block for me is Ubisoft and the name Ubisoft. And you know why I have a problem with this, right? Ubisoft, you know, promised us all these things with The Division, right? Yeah. And it feels like I've broken up with my best friend and I no longer want to speak to him because I was promised things, he left me hanging and just abandoned me. Yeah. But it's not just that. There are I suspect that I will be buying it, right? And that's only just to placate you and make you feel better. But no, I like the idea of the kind of open world combat-y kind of element to it. The only issue that I see with it is it's a team-based game for the most part. You can do it solo.
You can.
But, you know, the game really kind of shines when there are more than two players, more than one player playing, right? Now, for a game that is this open, and what you've just said, has it become a point where there is more content than actual substance? You know, do we make something look so beautiful and so big, and you can explore this and destroy that and do all of those things that make it, you know, just so we've created all of this.
Yeah.
Yet we've forgotten the damn gameplay.
But I still have this love of, you know, being able to customize your character to whatever you want, which, like, Division, you can customize so many things about your character, and then just set out on the field and do whatever you want to do.
Right. I love the idea of that.
The idea is great. I'm still trying to, please give me that feeling.
But, you know, Jeff, you're right, though. There's going to become a point where you're going to get to, I am sick of laid down on this hill waiting for a guy to come past. You know?
Yeah.
And little things like that, which you... Real life is not as interesting as we think.
No. Yeah.
You know, and I think we have this wonderful idea of this open world concept. Mm. And open world would be you going to the office every day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That, and
which is why I play Work Simulator.
Yes, you do. Oddly enough. I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah.
I'll see what it's like. I mean, if the appeal is there, then I'll continue to play it. But
we'll reserve our judgment until we get the full game on. Anyways, that's all we have for game time. If you missed any of any parts of this show or any other interviews or game reviews that we've did, just check on bfm.my or download the app. It's on iOS, the Apple App Store, or also Google Play. This has been Game Time. My name is Richard Bradbury, and together with
Jeff Sandu.
All right, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.